Off the Ball, GAA.
I mean, there was a lot of made of Congress at the weekend, and yes, a lot of different things came out of Congress. But for me, to be honest with you, I won't say it's off the ball. I think it's off the wall in terms of something like that coming into hurling.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Now Di Stefano. There's always tenor when he moves. And it's 7-2.
From the barrios of Buenos Aires to the roaring nights of Madrid, this episode traces the extraordinary journey of Alfredo Di Stefano, the visionary who redefined modern football. Born in Argentina, forged in the breakaway leagues of Colombia with Millonarios, and immortalized in Spain, he became the heartbeat of a dynasty. But what if the man they called La Saeta Rubia had taken a different path and gone to Real Madrid's biggest rivals, Barcelona? Find out on episode 6 of Richie McCormack's Sliding Doors podcast as to how European football could have been changed as we know it. Coming to you this Monday in your OTB football podcast feed for free.
Off the Ball Daily.
And you are welcome to Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you as always till 5. You hope we're doing great around the country, enjoying the better weather. What is coming up in the show today? Well, Ireland now have 3 wins from 4 in the Six Nations this year. Last night's 27-17 victory over Wales at the Aviva Stadium means Andy Farrell's men are 1 win away now from the Triple Crown. Scotland next week. We're going to review the encounter with the former Ireland wingers Dennis Hickey and Alison Miller, and the rugby writer Hugh Farrelly on the Saturday panel from 1:30. The hurling leagues roll on. Taggy Fogarty will preview the weekend's games at about 2:40. We've also got Football Saturday, as always, between 3 and 5. The former Republic of Ireland international Greg Cunningham, he of Manchester City and Bristol City and Preston and Galway United fame, will join his ex-Preston teammate Owen Doyle on the show this week. We're going to also keep you up to speed on everything else that's happening, folks, in the world of sport. Lots going on. You can WhatsApp us today. 087 9180 180. That is 087 9180 180. We have Mayo's finest, as always, with us for the news round. Cameron Hill. Good afternoon, Cameron.
Good afternoon, John. Spring definitely sprung out there. It's a beautiful day. I hope it's the same everywhere around the country.
I was at the official Cheltenham preview on Thursday night at the race course, and going back again on Monday, and was back in Dublin yesterday into the airport, and it was almost like Dublin had been through a car wash for 2 months, and then now we've got this suddenly gleaming, sunny, spring, fresh, cool day. It was just the most beautiful thing.
Oh yeah, no good deed goes unpunished, John. Finally, we've got a bit of a good run, as they say in sporting terms, at the weather.
So, and again, the older you get, the more you talk about the weather. That's what they say as well, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it.
The weather is, I would say, pretty reasonable for Ireland. I really enjoyed last night, I have to say. Enjoy the match. Look, we can get granular and nitpick over everything, but we got a bonus point. Wales died with their boots on. Look, I think I'd take it.
It was a brilliant game. I really, really enjoyed it. You know, I met a few friends and we went to watch it somewhere, and I don't think this is disingenuous to say that going into the game, I thought this might be over by maybe half time. You can relax, you can chat with your mates, and it was far from it. It was a right out test. I know Andy Farrell will hear from him in a second, but he said it was a proper test match, and it was. I was so impressed with how Wales came to the party. They brought a huge intensity. I think it's the most physical game I've seen in the Six Nations so far this year, and they were right up for it. I mean, this was one of those brilliant, dogged matches where anything could happen. Rhys Carey looking like a prime Jonah Lomu, going over the try and absolutely loving every second of it. Joe McCarthy on the wing, putting a kick chase through. It was
really
just
important
one of those
moment
games.
That was.
Huge, huge. But there were just brilliant individual moments throughout the game, and went toe for toe. I think I was really impressed with how Ireland worked their way out of it. There was a logic to how they did it. They were in a proper dogfight and they found a way to win. And I don't think the fact that maybe everyone was predicting like a 20-point swing, the fact that that didn't come to pass isn't a disaster.
No, not at all. Scotland next week, 10-point victory. So we have what? 27-17. That's where we're going to start the news round.
Yes, indeed. They held off a spirited Wales Ireland last night to secure the third win of their Six Nations campaign. Jamie Osborne's try with 13 minutes to go gave Andy Farrell's side a 27-17 bonus point win at the Aviva Stadium. Jacob Stockdale, Jack Crowley and Jack Conan with the other tries for Ireland last night. Speaking after the game, Farrell praised the intensity that Wales brought to the match.
I thought they was tremendous tonight. That was a proper test match, and for us to come away with a bonus point win, we'd certainly take that with how the game unfolded, because it was a different game to the game that we played last time round. We weren't playing rugby on the front foot because of how well they defended. I thought they was excellent in contact and set piece, and they could be really proud of their performance. The offside is the hotbed, isn't it, for referees at this moment in time, and to keep giving them another opportunity. When you're defending your own line pretty well, gives them the territory and the field goal factor that they're after, there's no doubt. We converted our chances pretty well a couple of weeks ago. Conversion rate in the 22, I thought we came up against a rock-solid defence who kept knocking us back, and we should have just been a little bit more patient at times, and I thought we'd get a reward from that. But I think most of the credit of how that test match unfolded has to go to Wales, because I thought there was outstanding in the way that they went about the fight. It was a dogged test match, and that's how these type of test matches should be.
It was a special night at Lansdowne Road for Jamison Gibson Park, who earned his 50th cap. His partner Patty and his children posted a special message on the team's social media channels congratulating the scrum half on his half century of international appearances. But he revealed that he turned down the invitation by Captain Caelan Doris to lead the team out last night, admitting he prefers not to indulge in the fanfare.
Yeah, look, I wouldn't be a massive fan of all the goings-ons, but look, it's part and parcel, I suppose, of hitting a milestone, and understand it's important to acknowledge. So, but to your question, I think I'm hugely grateful, man, to chalk up 50 caps. You know, I was nearly 29 when I debuted for Ireland. So, had you asked me then how it was all going to unfold, you know, I really had no idea. So. Yeah, I'm pretty grateful to get to this point.
The video that went out on the Irish rugby channels of your family, like in the stands, wishing you luck, did you know that was coming, and did that pull up the heartstrings a little bit?
So, normally I get ready to go into camp at about 3 or 4 o'clock after the day off, and my wife and the kids were leaving at the same time with the Irish jerseys on, and I was like, there's something fishy going on here. But and then the following day, Ryan showed me the video, and I was certainly caught on the hop. I didn't know it was coming, and for sure, yeah, it was a pretty emotional scene.
Nice moment for James Gibson Park, who probably, after Johnny Sexton's retirement, would be the first person on the team sheet now.
Definitely. You definitely got that sense when Nathan Doe came on, admittedly, for his international debut, when I think Gibson Park goes off for a HIA in the first half, and it was chalk and cheese, and how Ireland's attack was running from that point on. Gibson Park comes back on, and Wales, as Andy Farrell alludes to, were brilliant in defence, as were Ireland.
240 tackles Wales made.
And Ireland had a 95% success rate. Andy,
even back to France, when we're over 30 missed tackles.
Completely. They shored it up and knew what was coming. But the attack didn't quite flow last night. There were a few missed passes. There was one that really frustrated me, because it was more of an execution thing than an idea, when Balakoon offloads to Jacob Stockdale on the left wing. I think they're about midway through the game and it's on the halfway line. I think Stockdale is in for a try there. So there was just a few bits of sloppiness that they'll have to tweak, because like Scotland are coming next week and they really, 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 really want to beat Ireland for the first time since 2010 in Dublin. So I think...
And that was at Croke Park. That's how long ago it was.
Exactly. It's huge. And we'll get on to the games today. But I think the mood music around Ireland now, having had such a difficult Thursday night in Paris and the Twickenham game and the feel-good factor, but even being able to win a game where maybe you're not firing on all cylinders and still manage to dig it out of the fire, you have to be positive with that.
It's more satisfactory than the Italy game, because you didn't get the bonus point there. Folks out there, 087-918-118 WhatsApp, what did you make of last night? Were you at the game? What about the Friday night game, folks? If you're coming from Cork or from Limerick, I mean, you're going down with maybe your kids home. You might have got home at all hours. I mean, just what about that? Look, I know this behest of people beyond the Irish setup, but 0879 180 180. First of all, the Friday night game, what did you make of that? What was the atmosphere like? And what was the assessment from you guys out there around the country of the performance? I'd love to get your views ahead of our panel with Dennis Hickey, Alison Miller, and you, Farrelly, at 1:30.
France can claim the championship today if they beat Scotland at Murrayfield, but a win for the hosts will set up a potential decider against Ireland and Scotland in Dublin next weekend. That kicks off in Edinburgh at 2:10. I don't know if you saw Fabien Galthié giving out about the away dressing room in Murrayfield.
No.
So I didn't know this. When they renovated Murrayfield in the mid-90s, Jim Telfer, the then Scotland head coach, instructed that a 3-foot-wide green pillar was put in the away dressing room. Apparently has absolutely no structural benefit to the integrity of the stadium. It's just there to mess with the opposition because he can't, like, the head coach speaking to the players can't see the whole squad because there's just this big obstacle in the way. Scaltier was giving out saying it was the smallest dressing room in world rugby and that they're probably going to have to change in the corridors as a result. So a weird bone of contention going into today's game.
Maybe not now, but I remember back in the 80s, 90s, France always had a really bad record at Murrayfield. We also have England looking to just win.
Yeah, against Italy, late game, 20-5. By the way, that game in Edinburgh, 2:10. I think Italy are going to win this.
Why?
So listening to everybody this week, particularly across the water, the view from the Ireland game is that losing in the same manner you did to Scotland 2 weeks in a row suggests something psychologically isn't there for England right now. And I know Will Greenwood was on Off the Ball Breakfast and said they were in most of the 2003 World Cup winning team were into the camp at Penny Hill Park trying to sort of gee up the players and give them a bit more confidence. I don't think scrapping half your team from last time out, which is what Steve Borthwick has done for today's game, can inspire any confidence in those players. You're putting out a centre partnership who've never played together in Atkinson and Freeman against Brexoncello. So Nacho Brex is back for Italy today and they are formidable. I think they're one of the best centre partnerships, him and Tommaso Menoncello, in world rugby right now. Italy have a formidable scrum. They love playing in the Stadio Olimpico in Rome. The line-out might be the only issue and I think England have brought in Jamie George to give them that sort of platform. But England in a low ebb, we saw last year that when you get hammered at home and then have to play Italy next week from an Ireland perspective, that can be very, very, very challenging. And I just have the sense this is the best chance Italy are ever going to have to beat England. And I think they're going to take it.
Okay, Ireland under 20 is also in action.
Yeah, they host their Welsh counterparts at Virgin Media Park in Cork from 7:45 this evening, John.
We have really disappointing news from the Republic of Ireland squad.
Well, if the reports from Italy are to be believed, Republic of Ireland striker Evan Ferguson's been ruled out of the World Cup playoffs later this month. He's due to undergo surgery on a persistent ankle injury at his home club, Brighton, next week. So he's back from Rome. That could mean his stint at Rome is over, his season might be over, and leaves Hamer Hogmanson down an attacking option for the playoff semi-final away to Czechia in Prague on March 26th. He's already sweating over the fitness of Adam Ida, of course, who's been recovering from a hamstring injury while training with Swansea City over Christmas. But a huge blow to the Ireland camp today, yeah, and to Ferguson.
Like, Evan Ferguson's done really well in the qualifiers, obviously, with this club. It's just been a bit of a stop-start career for Evan with injuries, and you really just want to see him get a few years under his belt injury-free. We'll discuss it more with Greg Cunningham and Owen Doyle on Football Saturday between 3 and 5. We also have the women's team involved in the World Cup qualifier tonight.
Indeed, and head coach Carla Ward says they need to embrace the challenge of taking on one of the best teams in the world tonight. Having pushed France so close in a 2-1 loss in Tala Stadium midweek, Ireland are in Utrecht to face the Netherlands in their second Women's World Cup qualifier. Captain Katie McCabe fit to play today, but the visitors will be without the injured Denise O'Sullivan. That's underway at 7:45 Irish time also.
We have League of Ireland matches last night.
And Dylan Watts held his nerve from the penalty spot as Shamrock Rovers beat Derry City last night in the Men's Premier Division. A 1-0 win avenged their defeat by the same scorelines as the Candy Stripes in the season-opening President's Cup. Manager Stephen Bradley feels too much has been made of Rovers' apparent slow start to the season. He was speaking to Stephen Doyle after the game.
The President's Cup, that was our 14th training session, you know, and we'd had a heavy week. People read far too much into the game and what it looked like. We know when we freshen the group up and we're in our stride, this is what you get. And they'll only get better as the pitches get better. Like you said, Jack looked back to himself. He was brilliant tonight, Jack, in every aspect. Pico, not just tonight, the first three games has been brilliant. And then you can see the partnership starting to come together. You can see the little click starting to happen, which is really nice. And that'll only get better as the more we play. But it's it was never in doubt the group in terms of bouncing back. It was just more about us getting to our levels, and we're still not there. There's still loads to go. Just because we've won the game, it's not everything's great and perfect, and we need to keep getting better and better, and we know we will.
Duffy has been in sensational form. We spoke in our podcast during the week about what I was asking the lads, how do you set up to defend against a player like him? Your team obviously did a good job on him tonight. Was there a plan going into the game?
Yeah, of course. You have to respect that he's a top player. You have to respect that he's the one that makes so much happen for Derry City. So you have to respect that, and you have to give him that respect. He's earned that. He's won player of the year last year. This year he's won games on his own at times. So you have to give him that respect, and we did that obviously with if you looked into it in terms of how we defended against him and who we did that with. So we kept him quiet, which doesn't happen too often, but we managed to do it tonight.
Quite a lot of respect there that Stephen Bradley's given to Michael Duffy.
Yeah.
A few more times would have convinced me, I reckon.
Okay.
Elsewhere in the Premier Division last night, a header from Max Mata gave St. Pat's a 3-2 win over Dublin rival Shelburne in a Talca Park thriller. Bohemians remained top after beating Waterford 1-0 at the RSC, while it finished 2-2 between Galway United and Dundalk. And tonight, Drogheda United are on the road to Sligo Rovers for a 7:45 kickoff at the Showgrounds. In the First Division, the first Cork derby of the season finished 1-1 between Cove Ramblers and Cork City. It also finished Bray Wanderers 2, Athlone Town 1, Finn Harps 1, Wexford 1 and Treaty United 2, Kerry 2. Longford Town hosts UCD at 7:30 this evening.
What else we got? We got FA Cup action.
Yes, indeed. And Ndoni Madueke has put Premier League leaders Arsenal 1-0 up in their fifth round clash away to League One Mansfield Town. Later, Wrexham welcome Chelsea to North Wales, while Manchester City go to Newcastle. And last night, Liverpool booked their place in the quarterfinal with a 3-1 win away to Wolves.
That was welcome for Liverpool after what their defeat against Wolves at Molineux during the week. We got Kathleen McNamee as well in Utrecht to look ahead to the Republic of Ireland's World Cup qualifier against the Netherlands later on, just before we finish off at 5 o'clock this evening. Gaelic games wise, big hurling matches later.
Yes, Limerick welcomed the defending champions Cork to the Gaelic grounds in Division 1A. So Ben O'Connor's Rebels have 4 wins from 4 and on course to qualify for this season's final. Shane Barrett returns from suspension on a much changed Cork team, while Limerick have handed starts to Will O'Donoghue and Garrod Hegarty. The winner of this evening's other game between Galway and Kilkenny and Salt Hill should preserve their top flight status for next season. And there's also 3 matches in Division 1A of the National Camogie League today, John. Leaders into the weekend, Waterford go to Antrim. All-Ireland champions Galway are also on the road to take on Tip, and Cork are seeking their first points of the campaign. They're away to Kilkenny today.
We got Aidan Taggy Fogarty about 2:40 to come on and talk about those hurling matches. Remember Limerick and Cork, those two epic games in 2024 in the championship, last year's Munster final, which went to penalties. Going to talk to Taggy about lots of things, including the dissent rule, the decision with the Joe McDonagh teams not being in the quarterfinal anymore, the new GAA president, what that person, Derek Kent, will be having in their in-tray in terms of an agenda for hurling, and just how much these games matter ahead of the round-robin series in both Munster and Leinster. We have as well Rory McIlroy in action this week, always worth following.
Yes, indeed, and a much better second round for Rory at the Arnold Palmer Invitational last night. So 68 sees the Masters champion move into a tie for 9th on 4 under par. That's still 9 shots off the pace, John, with Daniel Berger the man to catch on 13 under, while Shane Lowry narrowly missed the cut last night. Finishes on 3 over.
After his disappointment last week, maybe understandable, thought it came out quite well, actually.
Yes.
With his comments, and just said, you know what, bigger things, more important things, and It's just a defeat. Dust yourself down and get on with it.
Didn't McIlroy go for a round with him on Monday and said, basically, listen, these things happen. I went on to have the best year of my career in 2014 after missing the cut or having a disaster on the same course. So
two majors, yeah.
Absolutely.
Daniel Berger's a lot of injury issues as well. I mean, five stroke lead. I mean, it can all evaporate, but he's in a very strong position at the moment in Bay Hill. Now, Formula One is back And Formula 2.
Yeah, no, we're all Formula 2 fans in this room, John, because Alex Dunn has earned a podium finish in the sprint race on the opening weekend of the new season in Australia. He crossed the line in fourth, but was promoted to third when Martinius Stenshorn was penalised, and he'll go from third in the grid in the feature race in Melbourne, underway just after midnight Irish time tonight, while Britain's George Russell will go from pole position in Formula 1 season opening Grand Prix in Australia. The Mercedes driver finished just ahead of teammate Kimi Antonelli in qualifying, with new Red Bull driver Isaac Hadjar going from third in Melbourne. Max Verstappen crashed out and will start from the back, while defending champion Lando Norris will go from sixth.
Well, obviously Mercedes has started well. It's just a strange time to be like, it feels like you don't really get into it maybe until a few weeks in, or until they come to Europe, these Grand Prix. Like, starting in Australia is just bad for the, just, you have to get up at a really early time in the morning to be watching that. You really have to be, it separates the casual fans from the diehards, I suppose.
Yeah.
There'll be some people out there who'll be absolutely buzzing about tomorrow morning.
But it does feel a bit off-Broadway. I think you're right. That's the problem. I think it's always been the problem I've had with the Australian Open, is that it just happens as the first Grand Slam of the year way too early in the season. And this is the same. So there are F1 fanatics in the office who are absolutely buzzing for this. I think Eve Conway and Kira Tracy counted among them for the first episode of the F1 pod. So plenty to get over in the off-the-ball feeds for you right now. But yeah, a little bit too early for me of a Saturday or Sunday in March.
Talking about a racing pod and an F1 pod, and our racing pod will have a special Cheltenham show every day from Tuesday at 10 a.m. live stream, 11:30 available on your pods, folks. And if you want to get exclusive tips and tickets to race days in the future, sign up for our Off the Ball Racing Pod Club. So offtheball.com/racingpodclub. It's free to sign up, and you get all your tips and your information there ahead of really some busy National Hunt festivals.
You're not going to Cheltenham next week,
possibly,
are you? Maybe.
I was there on Thursday for the official preview night, I was saying at the top of the news round here. And yeah, going over on Monday. And it's interesting that Galopin des Champs was ruled out of the Gold Cup last night. So it's really disappointing for William Mullins and everybody involved. I mean, two Gold Cup wins. He's going for a third next Friday, and he's been ruled out, just wasn't working well enough. And at the latest and I suppose 5-day declaration stage, we've had only 14 horses declared. So the only Willie Mullins runner in the Gold Cup now is Gaelic Warrior. So Factophile, who won the big race at Leopardstown at the Dublin Race Festival, does not run in the Gold Cup on Friday. Instead will run now in the Ryanair Chase on Thursday.
Marine National is also out of the Queen
That's
Mother
right.
Champion Chase.
A lot of horses out. Sergino's out. Constitution Hill's not running at the festival. Narciso Haz is out. State Man as well. So, but with every unfortunate non-runner, there's a chance for a new champion to be crowned.
It was amazing to me at Leopardstown over Christmas, just seeing how much of a cult of a following that Constitution Hill has. There were so many there on the opening day to see him go, and then obviously he fell in the race. But I had no idea that a racehorse like that could capture so many people's imaginations to see them in full flight. So it's a shame to see so many big hitters missing. It'll still be an amazing festival next week, but those big stars, you'd feel racing could have really done with them turning out.
I think there's always storylines. Last year, I mean, Rachel Blackmore has been a great ambassador for the game and has really done some amazing things to create some great storylines over the last 15 years. She won't be there now after her retirement, so that's a disappointment. But look, I spoke to Declan Queeley at Nace during the week, and he's just a Waterford trainer, doesn't have many horses, actually rides the horses as well. He's got a horse called I'll Sort That in a Grade 1 on Wednesday. So for a small yard to be going over, like Jimmy Mangan, his daughter Jane is on television, and he's got a horse with a chance of the Gold Cup's Balance Tower. So it's not always about the big yards like Willie Mullins and Gordon Elliott, but it's sometimes it'll be about the smaller trainers and the smaller yards and the smaller owners. So everybody's got a dream until we find out what happens over the next 4 days from Tuesday at Cheltenham. Mansfield Town have equalised against Arsenal in the FA Cup, the magic of the cup in the fifth round. 1-1. So League One team against the Premier League leaders. That's the beauty of it, isn't it?
It is. Just before we go, John, I'll run you through the Energy AIL fixtures for today. Just a point between Division 1A leaders St Mary's and holders Clontarf going into today's action. Mary's host UCD at Templeville Road. You've Tarf at home to Old Belvedere, Terenure College, making the trip to Nina Ormond. Lansdowne welcoming Young Munster to the Aviva Stadium back pitch, and Ballinahinch taking on Cork Conn. All of those games get underway at 2:30, and Energia AIL updates are with thanks to Energia. Think of the possibilities.
Cameron Hill, thank you so much for the news round this Saturday lunchtime with Braeburn Coffee's new oat range. Enjoy an oat matcha, hot chocolate or mocha, available now at select locations. Make it oat-ficial with Braeburn Coffee. Out amazingly easy. This is Off the Ball Saturday News Talk. After the break is the Saturday panel as we review Ireland's win over Wales in the Six Nations last night with Dennis Hickey, Alison Miller and Hugh Farrelly. We're back after.
Off the Ball Daily.